play the tune.
Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss! Strike three, it's over!
The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It's episode 97. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. I'm, as always, joined by Sammy and Pat. But we are joined by Red Sox pitcher Chris Murphy here. Before we get going, remember, hit us up on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter and Instagram and subscribe wherever you're listening. Check us out on YouTube on the WEEI channel. Murph, how you doing, man? It's been a long time.
It has. I'm doing good as I can be without playing. Just hanging out in Fort Myers. I was in Boston for one weekend. Hopefully I'll be back. We'll see. Just kind of getting ready for next season is kind of where my head's at, but also watching 162 from the couch.
So are you in Fort Myers right now?
I am, yes. Living in Cutter Crawford's house.
Oh, no kidding. So he has like a, so he owns there and you're just in his place?
Yep.
That's cool. So just before we really get going, just fill us in. Like, how's your recovery going? How are you feeling? We just saw your scar before we got started. That was pretty cool.
Oh, yep. It's right here. Recovery's going great. I was kind of slow out the gates for the first 6 weeks while I was in the brace. And once I got out, it was hit the ground running. Almost back to doing everything except for throwing, just lifting already, doing most things, and been messing around with some offhanded sports here and there, just having the rehab group do some fun stuff. And there's quite a few Tommy Johns down here. So got some company.
What do you guys play?
We started right after spring training with a mini golf tour where we just went to a bunch of different mini golf places, and Wyatt Mills was the commissioner of that league. That's what we were calling it. And he had like ride ups, and it was a fun time. I was a big fan of it. And then I started the offhanded bowling league, and it's gotten to a point where I have my own ball and shoes, and we're playing some serious offhanded bowling now. So,
is anyone good at offhanded bowling?
I'm not bad. Michael Fulmer, really good, and Brandon Walters, really good. And then Taylor Broadway, surprise guy on the offhanded bowling list
on the tour.
Yeah, athlete.
Have you guys ever tried, like, when you're, I go to bowling down the street and it's like by time. So every time you finish a round and there's like 5 minutes left, it's like you can't get a whole nother game in. So I always offhand bowl off those.
It's fun.
Have you guys ever tried it? Like,
we did like 3-game sets because it's more skill based than mini golf. So we were just doing like pick teams, the top 3 pick teams every week. And then you have a point system and then everybody goes to dinner, the bottom 4 pay for rats. But, I think there was our last, the championship week, we had like 5 or 6 guys shoot above 150 offhanded, which is pretty good.
Oh my God.
Oh, damn. Yeah,
I've had a couple of 200s since I got my own ball. With a house ball, not good, but got my own ball and bowling above a 200 sometimes now.
Dude, that's crazy. I've been trying to hit 200 really bowling for months. I can't get it. Like, actually, months is an understatement. I've really been trying to do it for the better part of 2 years, and I haven't hit it once.
You got to hook it. You got to hook it. You got to get your own ball, and you got to hook it.
Are you going to go back to bowling left-handed when you recover, or are you going to stick righty?
I'm not sure. I may have thrown one or two left-handed just to see how it feels. It doesn't feel too bad. I wouldn't go bowl a whole game, but messing around, I've thrown one or two left-handed to see if I still got it. I can't crank it yet, but right-handed, I think if I get consistent enough, I might as well just bowl right-handed and never have to worry about when I'm pitching and stuff like that. I can always bowl.
You can be like an ambidextrous bowler. But yeah. Wait, by the way, I got to ask. You showed us the scar on your elbow. I don't know if you're a tattoo guy. Are you going to get the classic baseball
scene? I'm not sure. I actually have quite a bit of tattoos. I have a full quarter sleeve. I don't know. I'm thinking about going happy face.
The Jabba.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do yet. We'll figure it out a little bit down the road.
Okay. So there's a chance. There's a chance. Yeah. So you've become an ambidextrous bowler. You're getting a new tattoo, maybe. Ambidextrous mini golfer.
Oh, I was going left-handed for that. But I was mini golfing in my brace, which wasn't the most ideal thing. Oh, little handicap.
Low impact, though.
Very low impact.
So, Chris, what we know you got surgery with Dr. Meester a couple months ago. What was kind of that process like? The initial kind of visit, going through the options, electing for surgery? Kind of like walk us through how that all went down.
So, got hurt in my last spring training game against the Phillies. I knew something was up with about like maybe 10 pitches left in my outing. I was like, I think something just went. Every throw after that didn't feel good. I was like, I might as well just see if it can completely go. I don't know if I should be saying that, but it was one of those things. I was like, well, I don't think it's going to get any better. It's one of those. I was feeling like my forearm grab after every single throw. Still didn't lose velo and had a 3-pitch punch out to end it. But walked off knowing something just wasn't right. Like, couldn't really sleep. I kind of got locked at, I don't know, maybe like 120 degrees. Like, couldn't really straighten it out all the way. Show up to the field the next day. I'm like, hey, I'm actually like really concerned about this. Got an MRI a few days later, and had a bone growing like through my UCL. It was kind of weird. I had the same thing in 2019. I just kind of tore the other side. I had a distal tear in 2019. Was able to pitch on it. Never rehabbed it or anything. Just kind of kept going. Then I had a proximal tear that I knew tear for this spring training. It happens. Went into Dr. Meester about a month later, and he sat me down, looked at my MRIs, and he was decently optimistic about doing a brace. And I was like, okay, cool. If you can get a brace done and I'm ready to go for opening day next year, awesome. So it was kind of like, we'll see when I woke up. Nope. He's like, yeah, you got every last throw out of that thing. It looked completely different than the MRI. And you're just going to, it's going to be a little bit longer of a process, but it is what it is. And just head down, keep going from there.
So I feel like when baseball fans think of these elbow surgeries, arm surgeries, shoulder surgeries, any of these major operations, we kind of just think guy gets the surgery done, then they recover. We kind of, you know, unintentionally remove the human aspect of it. So my question for you is, on the day of surgery, when you wake up and you know, like, you're going under the knife and everything, what was going through your head and what was that day like before and after the surgery?
I had a good thing. Like, the silver lining is that I had a while to think about it. I had from when I got hurt in March all the way through April 10th to really think about it and let it sit. And Dr. Meister's a very intense guy, very straight to the point, going to tell you what he's going to do. And then that's the day before for pre-op. And the day of, very calm, ready to go. And it was 7:30 in the morning. And then they calm you down with some nice drugs and whatever concoction they gave me. I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm ready to go. I was pretty at peace with it. I knew that it's what I needed and wasn't really too worried. The flight back sucked. That's about it. Flight back and an arm brace. Norcos. Not it.
Is it just because you're stuck in a weird position, or does like stuff swell when you're in the air?
Flying altitude isn't great for it right away, but as long as you take the right stuff, like you're good to go. So they make sure that you're ready to fly and that there's no clotting or anything like that.
When we were in Fort Myers with you before the season started, I saw that you and Liam Hendricks were hanging out a little bit. And I know it's not a perfect comparison, but did he give you any advice on like his process going through the surgery? Because he did his a little before you, I believe. And I don't know, maybe it could be helpful. How was that?
He did. He's more just a comedic character. We have a really, our friendship through text just involves sending each other pictures of our cats. I've got a cat too. he takes a different approach to things. He doesn't really lift. He's a guy that he'll walk into the weight room, and if there's weight on a bar, he picks it up and puts it down, and that's about all he does. And then that's what he'll walk in with his slides on, pick up a trap bar with like 350 on it and just lift it a few times and just walk away. And that's his lift for the day. And he's just a baseball player, man. That's all he wants to do. So we're different athletes, but just kind of seeing how his mindset is very helpful, very positive guy, always funny. So kind of having that light, being lighter about it, because rehab is long and it can suck. if you take yourself too seriously. So just trying to stay light and on my toes and just having fun with the guys down here as much as I can.
Is that why you got the cat? Did you get the cat after the surgery as like a, this is going to help me get through this?
I did. I was like, I need a friend. I need a furry friend. I went to, there's a cat cafe here in Fort Myers, and I just walked in and I was like, I want to see the oldest guy here. And I was already in my brace. I was like, I want to see the oldest one. They're like, most people come here for the kittens. I was like, no, show me the oldest guy. His name's Leo or Leonard or Leonard Skinner or Leonardo DiCaprio. He's over there just sleeping on the couch. He's a cool dude. He's got a big chiller.
Yeah, Sammy, where's Larry? We got to have a cat play date.
I was going to say, cats are super underrated. I got like a gigantic orange cat. He's working. He's busy right now. But
biscuits. He's hard at
yeah,
work.
Making biscuits and sleeping. Yeah, man, cats are underrated. I get so much crap from my friends. Like, you a cat? And I'm like, dude, my girlfriend and I love this thing. It's like our child, our idiot child.
They don't do anything. They come to bed with you when you're ready to go to bed. And that's really about it.
Does yours wake you up?
Oh, the other day was the first time he woke me up at like 4:30 in the morning, just punching me in the face. And I was like, oh, I must have been snoring or something, waking him up. No claws. He doesn't pull the claws out, but he's cool, dude.
That's good for him to be conscious. That's very nice of him.
He's thoughtful. Cats are notorious for being thoughtful to others.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So Murph, I gotta ask, the Red Sox this year, the team that you're watching every game from Fort Myers, they're 53-42. It's crazy. The three of us certainly didn't expect them to be this good. In spring training, did you think this team could be this good?
Honestly, yeah. Most people would say that that's like a delusional thing to think when you're like, wow, this team's really good. And I thought it last year too. It's like, there's a lot of good pieces here. And I think it was just like, we were really streaky last year. We were either stuck to the ceiling or stuck to the floor from myself included. I was either really good or really bad. I didn't have any like middle of the road outings. I think that's kind of how the team ran as well. And this year, I was just watching guys like Slayton just do his thing as a rule fly guy. I was there, I was like, how does a team not protect this guy? He's throwing 98 with a hammer curveball and a nasty sweeper. Like, there's no way this guy got unprotected. Weissert was, I think, just completely misused as a Yankee. He comes over, and he's having a pretty good year. Like, runs into some issues here and there, but that's just all of us. Where you're going to have ups and downs, and just a matter of like being reliable is a big thing. Kenley's doing his thing. Tanner and Cutter, I knew from the get, were going to be really good. Tanner had an unbelievable spring. We're like, yeah, that's going to be a dude this year. And that offense, there's Duran. I sent him a text the other day. I go, people are finally seeing 2016 Duran. I played summer ball with him in Walla Walla, Washington in 2016 after his freshman year of college. So I can say I've known him the longest. And he was doing this shit then, just hitting the crap out of the ball, triples all the time, doubles all the time, stretching singles into doubles. Just, he was a second baseman though, so we didn't really see the full athleticism in center. So it's been awesome watching him do his thing and watching Boston embrace him. I just wish he was a starter in this All-Star game, but that's a story for another day.
He deserves
it. Ridiculous. It's ridiculous. I want to go back and ask about Tanner Houck real quick. I think we all agree, like, talented pitcher and everything. And, you know, you said you thought he'd do well. But this well, I mean, this is like, he's at a 2.54 ERA. He's got 8 wins. I know people don't like to talk about wins, but we're at the break. It's a good time to reference it. Are you a little surprised at the level he's gotten to, or is this kind of par for the course for Tanner?
I mean, in spring, I wasn't surprised at all with what he was doing. He was doing great last year and then just got hit in the face. I think it's one of those, like, misfortune things. Like, he was throwing the ball well leading up to it, and it wasn't even like he got hit in the head by a 100-mile-an-hour comebacker. It's like 79 just hit him in the right spot. Wasn't even a great hit ball. So he always has had the ability to miss bats and has nasty shit. And him and Sale were, like, if you did the mirror thing, I think they're the exact same guy. And Sale's having himself here too. So,
Chris, for you, you mentioned it that you're watching 162 and hopefully more from the couch this year.
Definitely.
What's your line of communication? Yeah, hopefully more. What's your line of communication like with the guys up in Boston? You talking to everybody regularly?
I'll text people every now and then. I don't want to be bothering people. I text Hendricks sometimes, Tanner sometimes, Cutter probably most often. I'll just send like feeler texts out there, just like, hey man, look, you look great, stuff like that. I'm not trying to get in their way and be like that guy that's like, oh, just being nosy. But when I went up there, it was great to see the guys, like seeing Ref and Reese and all those dudes that I was hanging out with all spring. Like, really, really good time seeing them, and they all seemed pretty happy to see me, even though we lost 2 of 3 there when I was there. So I was like, I got to get out of here. But I was there for the Padres series, and the first 2 losses were bad. And I was like, oh man, maybe I got to put full uni on and go sit in the bathroom for game 3.
Oh, please don't. Hey, you. I heard you make a comment just now. You sounded pretty confident about playoffs for this Red Sox team. I know people are going to get upset talking about playoffs in July.
Yeah, I'm knocking on some wood.
Yeah, same. How confident are you, and why are you so confident? Like the baseball player version, not the fan version of like, these guys are fun, I like them. Why are you confident in this team?
Well, from day one of spring, or day one of, from pitcher side of Bailey getting hired, it's about winning. And if you make it all winning, like based on winning baseball games, and that's all that you want to do as a collective group. And when you're young and people don't necessarily like, when you're getting overlooked, like in those power rankings, how are the Red Sox not in it with like the best record since May 19th or something like that? When you're looking at those stats and they're not in power rankings, that just makes them a team you should be fearful of. Like, oh, no one's noticing these guys, and they're just quietly winning baseball games and doing it in pretty electric way, stealing bags, hitting homers, and striking dudes out. So it's one of those things that I think the more under the radar that they are, or that you are as a team, the easier it is to win. And then when you have guys like Cassis that kind of take up all the media attention, it makes it easier for other guys in the clubhouse for sure.
I've never heard anyone say that, but that's actually so interesting to hear that Cassis takes up so much of the media attention that it allows the rest of the team to focus on the stuff that matters.
Yeah, I'm sure guys see what he says and think it's ridiculous, but I think there's a portion of it where you're like, I mean, at least they're talking to him and not talking to me about my bad day or like what's going on through my head during the trade deadline, stuff like that. They're talking to Cassis. Go ahead. I would be, if I was in that clubhouse and I had a bad one, and they were talking to Cassis about his mid-game interview, I'd be like, yeah, thank you for taking that. I don't have to talk to media and do that stuff. And you're kind of out of the line. You're in the limelight, I think, especially with Netflix around. You want to be in the limelight as much as you can right now. So
when he made that comment about the dry swings, which I'm sure you saw, but if people are listening and they didn't hear it, he was speaking with a media member. And Costa said he's been taking dry swings. And they said, okay, how many? And he goes, I don't know. They're in my head, something like that. And they're like, so you're not taking dry swings? And he said, yes, I am. They're just in my head, which was a bizarre comment. What did you think of that? Do you guys hear comments like that from him all the time?
I will say this to anybody. I love that he's the same person to the media that he would be talking to me or talking to you or talking to anybody. He's the same exact guy, very genuine person. You're getting Tristan Cassis. You're not getting like, oh, he's putting on a show. Like, yes, he might waste your time for an hour and that might be his intention, but that's genuinely who he is. And I love that about him.
That's like the wasabi challenge. We did the wasabi challenge with Bradfo and him, and he sat in the dugout holding wasabi. What was it, Gordo? Like 7.5 minutes without speaking? He just sat there with the wasabi.
Have you seen the wasabi challenges yet?
I haven't.
Okay, so basically what that is Bradfo asks a trivia question. He's got like the wasabi cloud storage sponsorship. So it's basically he asks you a trivia question. Usually it's a question that you have no chance of getting. And literally, if you don't impossible. Get it. Although the one he asked Grissom was possible. He asked Grissom for Winkowski's 3 teams.
That's the easiest one so far.
Yes.
No, that's like by far the easiest one. Like, he asked Costas, what is Garrett Whitlock's middle name? And Garrett Whitlock's middle name is Getz. There's no way he would have gotten that.
And if the deal is, if you don't get it right, you have to eat this big ball of wasabi that he brings. And I don't know if you've like ever eaten a big ball of wasabi, but it like fires nerves up your nose.
Not a fan. Ginger guy, not a wasabi guy.
Yeah.
It's like the size of a quarter too. It's a good little dollop of wasabi, and it's
gross.
Von Grissom didn't mind it, according to him.
Yeah.
He said it was fine. But
Costas, when he got asked the question, he really didn't want to give in, even though there was just no chance. And he sat there without saying a word for 7.5 minutes. I was filming, like, my arms getting, like, tired from holding the camera. And he's just sitting there. And Rob gave him 3 guesses, and he never got it. And he ate the wasabi like a champ.
He did. Yeah, look.
That's right. Up. He didn't get the guesses out of the way quick. He definitely took his time. That's funny.
I'd be careful next time you're up in Boston. You got to be careful. Bobby, if you see. Yeah,
I got to brush up on my odd facts.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, if you're going to do the wasabi challenge, you got to be ready for it's pretty much impossible, though, to be totally honest. What did he ask me? It was like, what was the number Reese. Draft pick that Reese McGuire went? Like, I'm not going to know that. Off.
Second rounder.
No, it was like, no, he was a, wasn't he a first?
First rounder?
Sammy, whatever it was, remember I got it right because it was on the Jumbotron the day before, but I didn't get credit because it was your question.
Yeah, yeah. It was like 14th or something, I think. He was a pretty high pick, but it's, regardless, it's really hard questions. So next time you see Bradfo, be careful.
Steer clear.
He might ask you.
Chris, had you heard the Tristan's dad getting arrested at a Little League game before he just aired out on ESPN?
I was like, oh, what an interesting. It was a Father's Day, right?
It was the Father's Day game.
Father's Day story. But that's genuine Tristan Cassis. I love it.
That got picked up by Kimmel.
I think he's going to the All-Star game.
Yeah, as a media member.
I legitimately am not going to have the Home Run Derby audio on because I absolutely have to have his. I think he's streaming on Twitch. I got to have that on. That's important.
Yeah, whatever he's doing, I'm watching.
Yeah, I got to do that.
All right, I've got a question for you. This is, I know there's a lot of choices here. Red Sox have had a great first half, but if you had to pick one player to be the MVP of the first half, who would it be and why?
Oh, man. I think it's between Duran and Devers right now. Devers is playing with, I guess I haven't even talked to him about it, about with a bumped shoulder, and he's still doing his thing. But Duran 4-for-4 today to close it out. Can I have like 1A and 1B and put those two there? I think I would take them. They're just playing good baseball, man. There's a lot of guys I could also put there, like Wong getting an all-star snub, Hauk doing his thing. There's a lot of dudes that it could be.
The Wong one is – I was so upset when Wong didn't make the all-star team.
I mean, Salvi's having a career year. You got to give that to him. And then who's the starter?
Adley.
Yeah, I think the Orioles fans are voting a little bit more.
Yeah.
But if Salvi didn't catch those last two games of this series and he got hit, he got hit in the hamstring with a foul ball. So maybe he's 34 years old. He's caught like 1,000 games. Maybe sit it out. Let Connor Wong in.
Never know.
Like, come on.
Never know.
Sit it out. Just saying.
Just saying.
So we got the MLB draft coming up tonight as we record. It's Sunday, July 14th. Very broad question. What is the draft like? Because it seems very stressful, very hectic.
Most stressful day of my life. Stressful 2 days of my life, I guess. Yeah. You don't really know unless the guys you're going to see pick tonight kind of have an idea. But man, day two, you have no idea at all. I had no idea the Red Sox were going to pick me until like last pick of the 5th round. They called me and said, we're taking you in the 6th. I was like, huh, you guys talked to me one time and it was like 6 months ago. Haven't heard from you. Haven't asked me any questions, no follow-ups. Like some other teams had like a cross-checker meet with me or having just like additional meetings on top of like the original meeting I had or like giving me a phone call or shot me a text. The Red Sox did none of that. I was very, very quiet. And I think that's probably the story that most guys would have getting drafted by the Sox. And I think it pays off. I think we're looking at like a lot of good drafts put together in a row here where they stay pretty quiet and guys are like, yeah, they just pick me. And you never know if they're just snaking somebody. I'm sure it's, I don't know what goes on behind closed doors, but I'm sure it's something along the lines of maybe you don't want to leverage an offer and go to your agent and ask another team if you can get more and seeing what happens and plays out. But the Red Sox draft very well. From what I've been around, at least.
Yeah, it's like, obviously it's amazing to get drafted by any team, but with a extremely historic team like the Boston Red Sox, and obviously we're biased, But was there a little bit extra specialness to it? Kind of like, wow, this is not just some team. This is a big historic team.
Growing up a Yankee fan, it was probably the only team that I was like, oh man, what is my family going to think? For me, I'm just a baseball fan. I grew up a Yankee fan, but as time went on, I became just a baseball fan. And but my family definitely still Yankee fans, most of them at least. Not faring well for them the past few years, though. So
yeah, hey, come on. I mean, your name is Chris Murphy. That's a Red Sox player name.
It's very a Sox name.
Yeah, that's a Sox. That's not a Yankees.
You're drafted out of South Boston.
I cannot shave my face, that's for sure. I look all of about 13 years old.
If your last name was like Bonaducci, then I'd be like, all right, Yankees. But Murphy?
Yeah, we'll let it slide.
It's meant to be Boston.
So you shoved, I believe it was Father's Day last year, right? Against the Yankees, right?
Yeah, it was my second major league game on Father's Day.
What does your family say after that?
I didn't get a whole lot. I said that was, I got a couple of that was awesomes, or okay, we're going for the Yankees in game two. Stuff like
that. I love that. Hey, yeah. They're real fans.
They're Red Sox fans when I pitch. That was their rule.
So are they taking a year off this year?
I haven't even talked to anybody about baseball, really. I'll get some questions here and there, but don't talk about it that much.
What if it's like the ALCS and you're pitching the ninth inning with a chance to clinch? All right, they're definitely going to be rooting for you.
They better be rooting for me.
Could you imagine?
We're going to have some talks.
That would be awful if, like, the Red Sox get eliminated by the Yankees. And they're like, hey, oh, sorry. Sorry.
You're walking home after shutting it down against the Yankees in the ALCS. They just abandoned you.
Yeah, or that. They're just like, no, you're congrats, but you're sleeping outside.
Yeah. You get booted from all the family group chats.
Yeah, I'm not in very many of them, to be honest. I know that they're there. I think it's more just like, hey, let him go. He's playing baseball. He can't be dealing with 85 texts a day in the middle of the night coming from random aunts and uncles.
Yeah. Amen.
All right, last question for you before we let you go. We're recording Sunday, so Monday's the Home Run Derby. You got Pete Alonso, Teoscar Hernandez, Adolis Garcia, Jose Ramirez, Marcelo Ozuna, Bobby Witt Jr., Alec Bohm, Gunnar Henderson. Who's your pick to click?
Tyler O'Neill.
Yes.
Do you know if he was asked? Did he just not get asked?
I have no idea. I wish.
He would have been perfect.
There were some guys that I wish were in it. I'm going to go with Adolis Garcia. He can hit the ball.
I agree. He hits the ball.
Yeah. I don't know how Gunnar or Alec Bohm are going to do.
What's like, what makes a good like home run derby player? Cause I think Pete Alonso's perfect. Just the guy who launches,
you know, he does it every year. And I think he loves doing it. It's the guy that can put the ball out with as little effort as possible.
Yeah.
And then that's really just
Prince, if they Prince need to Fielder, step on be the same way. Prince was crazy to watch in the home run derby.
Yeah. The Josh Hamilton home run derby when he was just flicking the ball.
Yeah. Not barely even swinging.
Yeah. It's the guys that just flick it. I'm sure Devers would be great at it. Devers would go to all fields and hit every single pitch. The best bad ball hitter I've ever seen. So
Devers with a
have Garrett Cole throw him the batting practice.
Have the batting practice pitcher wear a Garrett Cole jersey and his eyes just go red. Yeah, it's all opposite field home runs. That'd be cool.
I've actually had a talk about him and Garrett Cole. We were sitting in the hot tub one day during spring. Who do you see the best? I don't know. I see Garrett Cole really good. I'm like, what are you thinking? Like, how do you just own him? He's like, I just look at what I've been doing bad and I know that's what he's going to throw me. If I've been missing the fastball, I'm hitting the fastball up. If I've been swinging and missing at the breaking ball, I'm swinging at the breaking ball down and hitting it out. And that is, I kid you not, that's what he does against Garrett Cole. It's hilarious.
Wild.
I feel it's got to be frustrating for Cole. I mean, from the pitcher perspective, have you ever had a guy who just has your number and you're like, I don't know what, I can't get this guy out. Like, what's that like?
In my few at bats with Alex Bregman, I'm like, are you kidding? How did you hit that pitch? I would say him. In the minor leagues, Gunnar Henderson got me, and I hate when lefties get hits off me. Hate it.
Yeah.
But Gunnar Henderson's a good hitter. Not enough to say like, oh, he dominates me, but just kind of someone who's annoying at the plate who will hit the ball the other way. That's the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mike Devers, the gunner thing.
In the other batter's box against the Yankees.
Yeah. That was crazy.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That was the craziest home run I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. That was in the group chat. It was like, how? It's unbearable with what.
He pulled it somehow.
He pulled it, and it didn't. It wasn't a wall scraper. It was on 430.
Yeah.
One guy in the league that does that. It's just him.
Yeah, and like the swing itself looked like it looked normal. It didn't look like he was like lunging for it or anything. Like he didn't.
He just went and got it. He hit another one this year. I don't know how he hit it. He hit some over the monster. I'm just like, how?
Or dig him out of the dirt. 450.
Yeah.
I mean, even on Saturday, Gordo and I were at the game, and Lugo threw this pitch outside, kind of like a decent pitch, and he just flicks it over the Green Monster, and it's like. He does it so many times. Good guy to have.
He's all right. He's all right.
Yeah, he's all right.
He's got a bright future.
Just a little bit. All right, man. Chris Murphy, we really appreciate you jumping on with us and appreciate everyone who listened. Episode 97 of Play Tessie. Remember, rate and subscribe everywhere you're listening. But Chris Murphy, we appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you, guys. We'll be back on soon.
Oh, yeah.